Welcome to Carittles. This week, resumes for managers, four common pitfalls and their solutions. The questions this cast answers are, can I put what my team did on my resume? How do I show developing my team on my resume? And how is turnover viewed on my resume? We recently added a virtual effective manager conference taking place on June 2nd, 3rd, 9th, and 10th. All sessions kick off at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. This one is gearing up to be a smaller conference, so if you're looking for an event with a smaller student-to-teacher ratio so you can ask tons of questions, this is it. It'll be plenty interactive, so register today, manager-tools.com/training. If you haven't heard us say this, we'll say it right now at the beginning. Resumes are for showing prospective employers what you did and how well you did it. That's all. That's what a resume's job is. What I did and how well I did it. And the job is to get you into the interview. And other things happen at the interviews, but that's all your resume has to do. But what happens if your team did the work and you just managed them, right? How do you show qualitative accomplishments like developing your team on a resume? Like, because resumes are quantitative. How do you show something qualitative? So that's what we're going to address today.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. We're going to start our cast today discussing your team's results. Are your results? Results go first on your resume versus activity. Training and coaching are activity. And recruiting may not always be a positive.
Yeah. So the first one is your team's results are your results. You led the team to achieve the results they did. And therefore, their results are your accomplishment as a manager. And this comes out of people saying, well, I didn't, you know, there was a project and the team, all my team worked on it. And do I say delivering the project was my accomplishment? Yes. If you led the team, if you managed them, even if they are a really good team who to some extent self-manage, you're still managing them. So you get the credit, at least in this sense.
Exactly. And guys, we know that there have been the waves and the trends in the way it was expected that individuals or managers, I should say, would talk about accomplishments over the last 30 years. Years ago, the focus on teams and collaboration meant people used a lot more we. It was selfish if you said I achieved when the result was really accomplished with the help of other people. So it's caused a lot of individuals, managers in this case, to say we achieved instead of I. Claiming results as your own was seen as a faux pas, if not just plain selfish and unethical. Now, prior to this being the case, you might have heard, I achieved a 3% increase in sales by writing copy on our website. And when team collaboration became of the uppermost importance, what you'd instead hear is, we achieved a 3% increase. And if it was probed, right, if individuals asked more for an elaboration, you would have heard, well, yes, of course, I rewrote the copy, Bill put it on the website, Jill helped me proofread the work, and then April reviewed it and gave her input in terms of quality assurance. So it is true that everything achieved at work today, obviously we're in organizations, there's groups of people, all of the things that get done are achieved by multiple people's efforts being put towards them. Giving people the credit they deserve when you're seen as successful is the relationship preserving part of the activity.
So lately, there's been a pushback towards the individual rights in the workplace, and I achieved is acceptable again. And that doesn't mean that you're not giving other people credit when they deserve it, but it is acceptable to say that you achieved something where that something required effort from others. Mm-hmm. But given this history, it's completely understandable that people are now confused as yes. to whether I should say we or I, and what do I put on my resume and how do I explain it? And it's difficult. And you know, if you go on the internet's now been around for 25, 30 years. And there's that much history of one way, the other way, one way, the other way. So, but to the organization and for your resume, what you and your team achieved is what you achieved.
Yes.
It's taken as read that an accomplishment like achieved a 3% sales increase would not only have been your doing, but would have taken effort and assistance from others. But for the purposes of your resume, if the 3% increase was driven by the copy that you wrote, if that was the major part of it, you can claim it as your own.
Mm-hmm. And remember, folks, that your resume is a headline. It's not the story. In the interview, you've got that opportunity to talk through the story, the collaboration, the team cooperation, the other folks that helped you. On your resume, though, you don't have a lot of space. You only have room for a headline.
So my dad sent me this headline because he was very excited. He supports Burnley, which is a soccer team in the UK. And he sent me the headline, Liverpool's nil, zero. Burnley won. Ashley Barnes scores winner. So Burnley weren't expected to beat Liverpool, and they did, and my dad was very excited. And, and Ashley Barnes scored the winning goal. And in the headline, it said, Ashley Barnes scores winner. And it only tells you that Burnley won the soccer match and one team member scored the goal. But even when you're reading the headline, you have the background knowledge that he wasn't alone on the pitch. There were 10 other players, right? And then there's, you know, the support staff and the fans and the, you know, all of the people that go into having a successful soccer team. That said, he's still the one who's responsible for the goal that created the win. And so on his resume, he can write achieved winning goal for Liverpool match by scoring from a penalty kick. And we never think that he's the only one on the pitch.
No one thinks that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, guys, based on the analogy, in that same way, as a manager, you can claim your team's accomplishments, where you have an achievement like achieved 100% reduction in support tickets by standardizing and streamlining responses. It's not necessary for you to have gathered all of the current responses, analyzed them, rewritten them, written a process document, and then trained your team so that you can put it on your resume. It's frankly not even necessary for it to have been your idea in the first place to put it on your resume. Your role in that accomplishment was that you led the team through the process. That's your accomplishment. Hopefully, without you, the team wouldn't have been able to accomplish it. Again, we hope, because I mean, to be perfectly honest, if they could have done it without you, I'm not sure why you're there. So, if you really want to and have space to, you can add additional pieces of information to your accomplishment to potentially give credit. So for example, achieved a 100% reduction in support tickets by leading, standardize, and streamline response project.
Yeah, because if you say leading, there's the implication that there's other people. But you don't always have that much room on your resume.
You don't.
On what the other words are, and that's okay.
Yeah, and it's not necessary. I mean, it was a team effort, and we all know that.
So next is results go first on your resume, not activity. So any accomplishment bullet on your resume follows the format verb, result, method. So achieved is a verb. 10% reduction in costs is the result. By instituting financial controls is the method. But when, especially when people send resumes to us, it's common to see led team using one-on-ones or achieved 90% of one-on-ones because people are really proud that they've done their one-on-ones and it made a difference. And it's part of their management success.
Style,
and,
yeah.
So they want to put it on there. The problem with that is the results need to come first, and one-on-ones aren't results, they're activity. There's something you do in order to get something else, because the purpose of one-on-ones is to build relationships. And because you have better relationships, you get better results against the metrics that the organization gives your team.
Right. The fact that you put in place one-on-ones or achieved a certain percentage of completion in your one-on-ones is truly irrelevant if it didn't lead to results for the organization. We all know it led to results for the organization, but you want to make sure that's clear on your resume. So if you've listened to our one-on-one guidance, you've implemented one-on-ones, you should be able to analyze that and answer the following questions. The purpose of one-on-ones is building trusting relationships with your team. And better relationships lead to your team giving more discretionary effort, coming to you earlier with problems, being more willing to share ideas with you, all of the things that trust enables. So extra effort, earlier notification of problems, more ideas being shared with you leads to better results.
There would be no point in conducting one-on-ones if there wasn't some kind of return on investment for the organization. All the people that say, I don't have time to do one-on-ones. If you've got a team of 10 and you're investing 5 hours a week in one-on-ones, we really hope there's some kind of payoff for right. that. And we are convinced there is. If you're not doing that yet, yes, there will be. But again, the one-on-ones are the activity, not the results.
Exactly. So instead of lead team using one-on-ones, we'd rather see accomplishments like achieved an average of 3% increase in incremental revenue per guest by reviewing individual results weekly with team members.
Where reviewing results weekly with team members is one-on-ones, right? Mm-hmm. This is what I was doing in my one-on-ones.
Exactly. Or increase task throughput by 10% per team member by reviewing workload weekly with team members. Again, referring to one-on-ones, but you're showing the achievement or result of that. Reduce spending on incidentals by 15% by reviewing requests during weekly one-on-ones. You can even say weekly one-on-ones, but again, it's the action, not the result.
And the same for coaching and delegation and feedback on all the others. What happens, hopefully, is the hiring manager reads this and thinks, a 3% increase in incremental revenue, I'd like that in my team. So I'm going to get this person in and interview them and find out about this reviewing individual results. Like, how did they do it? How often did they do it? Why did it work? But what else, what other ideas do they have? So a resume is almost the hook that gets them intrigued enough to invite you in for an interview. And at the interview, you explain, this is what one-on-ones are in my world. This is how I do it. This is why I do it. This is the results I get other than the one I put on my resume. So the resume is the headline. And in the interview, you tell the story.
Absolutely. One more thing on that. Depending on where you're reading this, the accomplishments may take more than one line. On your resume, we want to make sure that you give accomplishments one line each so that you can fit the maximum number on the page.
So if you're reading the show notes on your phone, it may look like the accomplishments that we've been talking about are on like 2 or 3 lines.
Yeah,
but that's long. Only because they're on your phone. On your resume, yeah. They need to be one line each.
Yeah, exactly.
Since we're talking about resumes today, it would be remiss of us not to mention the interview series and the resume workbook. The resume workbook takes you through whatever you have right now for your resume, all the way through to an effective resume with tons of detail and examples for you to follow. The interview series takes up from having your resume all the way through the process of deciding what you're looking for, building a convincing argument, answering interview questions, all the way through to accepting offers. Both of these products are currently available with a personal license, which means effectively you get them for free, or you get a personal license for free with all the benefits that confers. Whichever way you think of it, it's a steal, so you should get it now. Go to the Manager Tools website, look for products on the menu bar.
All right. Training and coaching then. The next section, are an activity. Training and coaching your team is incredibly important to their success, your success, I would even say organizational success. Again, though, these activities are activities, and they don't belong on your resume in terms of activities, except in the context of the results that you've received from them. And as Wendy said, like one-on-ones, managers are proud of the coaching and training that they've done, growing their staff, taking them to the next level. And they see that, rightfully so, as a major part of their job. But your resume is only a single page. You don't have room for all of the things that you wish you could say and you're proud of. There just simply isn't space for activities, only for results of activities.
So one thing that we see sometimes on a resume or something like, trained all team members in the use of DISC when talking to customers. But the training is the activity, it's not the result. You could train for hours on end and not get any result, you know, if you do it wrong.
Or sad but true.
Your person doesn't pay any attention or they forget it, right? So good on you for doing the training, but what was the result? So something like improved customer satisfaction 25% over 3 months by training the team members in DISC is a better accomplishment because it starts with the result. And again, when you send your resume somewhere, the hiring manager looks at it and goes, oh, I would like an increase in customer satisfaction by 25%. I'm going to call them in and ask them about this DISC thing.
Yeah. So for example, another one, instead of saying that you held monthly employee meetings to give updated training, you'd instead say increased order efficiency 95% by training the team members in updated procedures, making it both results as well as, in my opinion, far more persuasive. It's a better headline.
It is a better headline, yeah. Okay, one more of these. So coach personnel in customer service, team building, and merchandising. So then we would turn that into something that begins with results. Increased sales by 5% by coaching team on research-backed merchandising techniques. Again, the person who reads this is like, you know, if you had two resumes, one says, I coached the personnel in customer service or merchandising, and the other one says, I increased sales 25% by coaching in merchandising, which person do you think has a better handle on what matters in an organization? At least it's the person who's getting the results, or at least knows what the results are and understands what some of the levers are to getting better results. And there's nothing to say that if you were the first person, if you wrote coached personnel in merchandising, there's nothing to say that you didn't also get 25% increase in sales or more, but because it's not on your resume, nobody knows. It's like it doesn't exist. And so when you compare the two as a hiring manager, you want the one with the numbers.
Absolutely. All right. That takes us then to our last point in that recruiting may not be a positive. Many times managers think that recruiting new staff is a positive item to put on their resume. Now, whether it depends or not, the circumstances of the recruitment are important. Recruitment by itself isn't always a positive. For example, recruited 10 staff might be a positive. Sure. If the reason that you needed staff was that the company or your team's workload had grown, you got new customers and new business, and you wanted to make sure you were bringing in additional talent to support all of the hard work you've done, that's one thing. If the reason that you had to recruit 10 new staff was that you had 100% unwanted turnover in 10 years, then it doesn't show value. Rather, it actually shows weakness and poor management technique.
It's like, that one could be taken one of two ways.
Yeah.
And to be clear, acceptable turnover varies really widely by your industry, your specialism, your geography, the economic cycles, there's all sorts of things. In call centers, 30 to 45% turnover is really common. Seasonal roles and roles filled by students also have really high turnover. For the majority of corporate roles, between 10 and 20% is a very general average. But you need to know the specifics in where you are. And everyone, it's a bit like, It's a bit like losing weight in that everybody's got a reason. Like, oh, yes. I didn't read. Yeah, well, it was so-and-so's birthday, so I had to have some cake. Or, you know, oh, well, it was the last time I was going to see that person. So, of course, we had drinks, and drinks have calories in, right? And it's the same with people leaving companies. It's like, oh, well, you know, that person had been poorly performing for years.
Right.
We wanted to get rid of them. Or, oh, well, she had a baby. Or, oh, his wife had an offer of a job in a different state or whatever. You can explain them all.
Yeah.
But that still doesn't mean that it's good turnover necessarily.
Right. Exactly. Additionally, on the flip side of that, keep in mind, guys, a 0% rate of turnover over several years isn't necessarily positive either. It could suggest a stagnating team, right? Without growth, without change. It's not evolving based on the current landscape in which your organization works. So knowing your expected retention / turnover rates is important.
And what's more, recruiting is activity. So if we go back to the same thing, activity isn't what's on your resume, or at least it's not what comes first, it's the results. So a good accomplishment here would be something like increase team capacity 10% to provide service for 4 new clients by recruiting 2 new staff. Because one, it begins with the result, which was increasing team capacity. And there's a positive reason for that, having new clients. And then you get to the recruiting new staff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Another one might be reduced cost of service per customer by 5% by recruiting new staff at the market rate. Again, starting with your result before going into your action.
And people cost money. People cost money. That's obvious. But hiring is obviously an addition. If you hire a new person, that's an additional cost to the business. So being able to say something like, we reduce the cost of the service per customer by having an extra person. So sometimes if you get an extra head, that might cost you $50,000. But then if that's a salesperson, they might bring in another $400,000. So even though you're paying more out, you're getting more in. And that can be true in all sorts of teams. But again, knowing that, being able to say that is really important because it shows you understand the dynamics of the business and the economics of the business.
Mm-hmm. Something we often say in our effective hiring manager conferences is that every additional hire you bring in guarantees additional cost.
Yes.
But not every single hire you bring in guarantees additional productivity.
Oh, that's so true.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it seems weird to say it, but you guys all know at least one person in your organization that isn't productive. So, example in point.
I was reading something this morning. What was I reading? I think it was a sales book. And the guy was saying, you know, if you have someone who is not a great salesperson on your team, but you're letting them get away with it in the sense of you're not giving them feedback, there's no consequences for not meeting targets and all that stuff, it encourages everybody else to come down to that level. Because apparently you can work less and have no consequences. And so everybody comes down. Whereas if you hire a new high performer, everybody comes up. Even the people that have been there for ages, because there's an incentive. There's competition.
Yes.
There's you know, somebody showing the way. There's all sorts of reasons for that. So yeah, that's kind of by the by, but I thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm. That is very interesting.
Yeah. So most of these resume mistakes come out of managers wanting to be fair to their team or talk about things they're proud of. These are really common things I see, Mark sees, we see on resumes, and you can read between the lines and know, oh, I know what you're trying to say, but you're not saying that.
Right,
and
exactly.
So that's why we wanted to do this cast. So we can tell you from the other point of view, we understand this is what you want to say, but this is the way to say it and get the result that you want.
Mm-hmm. All those intentions come from a great place, but don't necessarily have the results. So reminding yourself that your resume is about results and headlines getting you in the door so you can have that interview to explain the how you achieved your headline will help you avoid the pitfalls.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. We'll be right back.